Today on Family Talk.
Well, welcome to Family Talk, ladies and gentlemen. I am the host of the program, James Dobson, and I have what I think is a treat for our listeners today. We're going to go back in time 34 years to hear a speech given to the National Religious Broadcasters Convention by a president that I loved, Ronald Wilson Reagan. I had the pleasure of working with him off and on for 5 years when he was in office, and I was at the White House on his last day as president when he met with his staff for the last time. There's some reasons that explains why I was there, but I just remember the tears around the East Room on that day. And people loved him. He was a unique human being. This National Religious Broadcaster's speech is only 22 minutes long, but it'll tell you what Ronald Reagan stood for. He made references to God and the Bible and abortion and other things that matter to conservative Christians throughout this brief speech. He was not able to accomplish everything that he intended because he was opposed by the opposition party that blocked his initiatives, especially on abortion and school prayer. But you will see where his heart was, and there's not much doubt about that. With that, here is the 40th President of the United States speaking at the National Religious Broadcasters. That's January 31st, 1983. And the audience response speaks for itself.
The President of the United States.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Please, you did that. Thank you. Thank you all very much, and thank you, Brent Gustafson. Ladies and gentlemen, the distinguished guests, thank you all very much. What a wonderful sight you are. Because every year when I come here, when I look out at your warm and caring faces, I get a very special feeling, like being born again. There's something else I've been noticing. In a time when recession has gripped our land, your industry, religious broadcasting, has enjoyed phenomenal growth. Now, there may be some who are frightened by your success, but I'm not one of them. As far as I'm concerned... As far as I'm concerned, the growth of religious broadcasting is one of the most heartening signs in America today. When we realize that every penny of that growth is being funded voluntarily by citizens of every stripe, we see an important truth. It's something that I have been speaking of for quite some time, that the American people are hungry for your message because they are hungry for a spiritual revival in this land. When Americans reach out for values of faith, family, and caring for the needy, they're saying, we want the Word of God. We want to face the future with the Bible. Facing the future with the Bible, that's a perfect theme for your convention. You might be happy to hear that I have some good news of my own. Thursday morning at the National Prayer Breakfast, I will sign a proclamation making 1983 the year of the Bible. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. We're blessed to have its words of strength, comfort, and truth. I'm accused of being simplistic at times with some of the problems that confront us. But I've often wondered, within the covers of that single book, are all the answers to all the problems that face us today, if we'd only look for them. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. I hope Americans will read and study the Bible in 1983. It's my firm belief that the enduring values, as I say, presented in its pages, have a great meaning for each of us and for our nation. The Bible can touch our hearts, order our minds, refresh our souls. Now, I realize it's fashionable in some circles to believe that no one in government should order or encourage others to read the Bible. Encourage, I shouldn't have said order. That we're told that we'll violate the constitutional separation of church and state established by the Founding Fathers in the First Amendment. Well, it might interest those critics to know that none other than the father of our country, George Washington, kissed the Bible at his inauguration. And he also said words to the effect that there could be no real morality in a society without religion. John Adams called it the best book in the world. And Ben Franklin said, "The longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. Without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little partial local interests. Our projects will be confounded, and we ourselves shall become a reproach, a byword, down to future ages." So when I hear the First Amendment used as a reason to keep the traditional moral values away from policymaking, I'm shocked. The First Amendment was not written to protect people and their laws from religious values. It was written to protect those values from government tyranny. I've always believed that this blessed land was set apart in a special way, that some divine plan placed this great continent here between the two oceans to be found by people from every corner of the earth, people who had a special love for freedom, the courage to uproot themselves, leave their homeland and friends to come to a strange land. And when coming here, they created something new in all the history of mankind, a country where man is not beholden to government. Government is beholden to man. Now, I happen to believe that one way to promote, indeed to preserve, those traditional values we share is by permitting our children to begin their days the same way the members of the United States Congress do, with prayer. The public expression of our faith in God through prayer is fundamental as a part of our American heritage and a privilege which should not be excluded from our schools. No one must be forced or pressured to take part in any religious exercise, but neither should the freest country on earth ever have permitted God to be expelled from the classroom. When the Supreme Court ruled that school prayer was unconstitutional almost 21 years ago, I believe it ruled wrong. And when a lower court recently stopped Lubbock, Texas high school students from even holding voluntary prayer meetings on the campus before or after class, it ruled wrong too. Our only hope for tomorrow is in the faces of our children. And we know Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come unto me and forbid them not, for such is the kingdom of God." Well, last year we tried to pass an amendment that would allow communities to determine for themselves whether voluntary prayer should be permitted in their public schools. And we failed. But I want you to know something. I'm determined to bring that amendment back again and again and again and again until we restore. know, we were frustrated on two other fronts last year. There are 5 million American children attending private schools today because of emphasis on religious values and educational standards. Their families, most of whom earn less than $25,000 a year, pay private tuition, and they also pay their full share of taxes to fund the public schools. We think they're entitled to relief, so I want you to know that shortly we'll be sending legislation back up to the Hill, and we will begin the struggle all over again to secure tuition tax credits for deserving families. There's another struggle we must wage to redress a great national wrong. We must go forward with unity of purpose and will. And let us come together, Christians and Jews, let us pray together, march, lobby, and mobilize every force we have so that we can end the tragic taking of unborn children's lives. Who among us can imagine the excruciating pain the unborn must feel as their lives are snuffed away? And we know medically they do feel pain. I'm glad that a Respect Human Life bill has already been introduced in Congress by Representative Henry Hyde. Not only does this bill strengthen and expand restrictions on abortion, financed by tax dollars, it also addresses the problem of infanticide. It makes clear the right of all children, including those who are born handicapped, to food and appropriate medical treatment after birth, and it has the full support of this administration. I know that many well-intentioned, sincerely motivated people believe that the government intervention violates a woman's right of choice, and they would be right if there were any proof that the unborn are not living human beings. Medical evidence indicates to the contrary. And if that were not enough, how do we explain the survival of babies who are born prematurely, some very prematurely? We once believed that the heart didn't start beating until the fifth month. But as medical instrumentation has improved, we've learned the heart was beating long before that. Doesn't the constitutional protection of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness extend to the unborn unless it can be proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that life does not exist in the unborn? And I believe the burden of proof is on those who would make that point. I read in the Washington Post about a young woman named Victoria. She's with child. And she said, in this society, we save whales, we save timber wolves and bald eagles and Coke bottles, yet everyone wanted me to throw away my baby. Well, Victoria's story has a happy ending. Her baby will be born. Victoria has received assistance from a Christian couple and from Save a Life, a new Dallas group run by Jim McKee, a concerned citizen who thinks it's important to provide constructive alternatives to abortion. There's hope for America. She remains powerful and a powerful force for good. And it's thanks to the conviction and commitment of people like those who are helping Victoria. They're living the meaning of the two great commandments. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy might, and thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. Each year, government bureaucracies spend bills for problems related to drugs and alcoholism and disease. Has anyone stopped to consider that we might come closer to balancing the budget if all of us simply tried to live up to the Ten Commandments and the Golden Rule? America's heart is strong, and its heart is good. You know, I mentioned drugs a moment ago, and I hope you'll forgive me if I digress just long enough, because I don't often get the chance to say this publicly, how proud I am of Nancy and the job she's doing helping to fight drug addiction. I do that every day for her. I know that each of you is contributing in your own way to rebuilding America, and I thank you. As broadcasters, you have unique opportunities. And all of us, as Protestants, Catholics, and Jews, have a special responsibility to remember our fellow believers who are being persecuted in other lands. We're all children of Abraham. We're children of the same God. You might be interested to know about a few of the changes that we're making at the Voice of America. Our transmissions of Christian and Jewish broadcasts are being expanded and improved. This year, for the first time in history, the Voice of America broadcast a religious service worldwide, Christmas Eve, at the National Presbyterian Church in Washington, D.C. Now, these broadcasts are not popular with governments of totalitarian powers, but make no mistake, we have a duty to broadcast. Alexander Herzen, the Russian writer, warned, "To shrink from saying a word in defense of the oppressed is as bad as any crime." Well, I pledge to you that America will stand up, speak out, and defend the values we share. To those who would crush religious freedom, our message is plain. You may jail your believers, you may close their churches, confiscate their Bibles, and harass their rabbis and priests, but you will never destroy the love of God and freedom that burns in their hearts. They will triumph over you. Malcolm Muggeridge, the brilliant English commentator, has written, "The most important happening in the world today is the resurgence of Christianity in the Soviet Union, demonstrating that the whole effort sustained over 60 years to brainwash the Russian people into accepting materialism has been a fiasco." Think of it, the most awesome military machine in history. But it is no match for that one single man, hero, strong yet tender, Prince of Peace. His name alone, Jesus, can lift our hearts, soothe our sorrows, heal our wounds, and drive away our fears. He gave us love and forgiveness, taught us truth, and left us hope. And the book of John is the promise that we all go by. Tells us that for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life. With his message and with your conviction and commitment, we can still move mountains. We can work to reach our dreams and to make America a shining city on a hill. And before I say goodbye, I wanted to leave with you these words from an old Netherlands folk song because they made me think of our meeting here today. We gather together to ask the Lord's blessing. We all do extol thee, thou leader triumphant, and pray that thou still our defender wilt be. Let thy congregation escape tribulation, thy name be ever praised. O Lord, make us free. To which I would only add a line from another song. America, America, God shed his grace on thee. Thank you again.
Well, I'm James Dobson. I'm here with Brian McNulty, our Vice President of Media. And I just want to add some final thoughts to what we have just heard. That was a wonderful speech given by the 40th President of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan. I'm not positive because it happened a number of times, but I believe I was there that night. And I think I spoke right after Reagan spoke. My speech was not near as inspirational as his, but he meant that. Those words meant something to him. I believe that he was deeply committed to Jesus Christ. He had a Bible on his nightstand, and he read it. I've heard that from a number of people who were with him at that time. And we wanted to bring back those memories. Ronald Reagan was not a perfect man. He didn't accomplish everything that he had hoped to accomplish because he had a Democratic majority that fought him, especially in the early days. But he was a great president, maybe one, I think, of the three greatest presidents that we have had. And it was an honor to let our listeners hear these words from a man who I believe is in heaven waiting for us today.
Well, Doctor, thank you very much for bringing back this classic recording. All of us here in the studio, all the producers that work for you, some of us were kids, some of us were teenagers back in the 80s. But what we have marveled at is the fact that so much of what Reagan was talking about and so much of what President Reagan stood for is still relevant today. Isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. And, you know, designating that year as the year of the Bible, there was a lot in that speech that had spiritual implications. And so, again, it was a pleasure to let our listeners hear it.
Well, as we close today, final thoughts from you on where we are today as a nation. Is there hope? Do you see a chance for revival?
There is always hope. I believe that America is in turmoil. I believe that we're divided one from the other, and there are those who want to bring down Donald Trump as our president. I think that would be a great mistake. They did it to Richard Nixon, and it took 10 years to recover from that. And I think that if it had not been for Ronald Reagan becoming president, that we would not have recovered as quickly as we did from it. There are those that want to impeach this president. I pray that they will not be successful. Once again, he's a flawed vessel. We know that. He's not a perfect man, but he's trying to put this nation on a more firm footing after 8 years of Barack Obama, and I pray that he will be successful in doing so. We need to pray for this man. We need to pray for our country. We need to pray for a revival.
Dr. Dobson, as always, thank you. From all of us here on the production team at Family Talk, we appreciate your perspective and opinions and look forward to hearing you again the next time.
Thank you, Brian.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Hi, this is Dr. Tim Clinton, President of the American Association of Christian Counselors and Executive Director of the Center for Counselor Education and Family Studies at Liberty University. So excited to tell you about a brand new center that we've started at Liberty. It's called the James C. Dobson Center for Child Development, Marriage, and Family Studies. Why is it so significant? Well, what's amazing about it is you can go back to school, and regardless of your major, you can now get a minor from Dr. James Dobson, a minor in marriage and family, maybe a minor in child development, or a minor in family advocacy. And you can become even a certified marriage and family relationship coach by going through those programs. It's an amazing opportunity to help impact your personal life and your relationships, to give you a great opportunity for ministry, and to maybe fulfill that calling that God's placed on your life to help other people. I can't wait for you to learn more about the courses, program of study, and you're going to have an opportunity to learn from Dr. James C. Dobson and other selected professionals through this program. I can't wait for you to learn more about these programs of study, and hopefully Join us at Liberty. Go to liberty.edu/Dobson. You can learn more by going simply to liberty.edu/Dobson. Again, that website is liberty.edu/Dobson.